Sundell will let one fly. That won't go. The rebound inside to who else? Addie Brown. Shell outlet to Ryan. And Iowa State, it's the all-important resume builder on the road. The Cyclones likely punch their ticket to the big dance, upsetting 15th-ranked Kansas State in Manhattan and ending the Wildcats' 17-game home winning streak.
Brad Smoller with the call on television as the K-State women do drop their first game of the year at home. The KU men lost their first game of the season over the weekend to BYU. K-State women lose their first game at home on the season, and their hopes of hosting the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament are dwindling. They will probably have to have a really good showing at the Big 12 tournament, T-Mobile Center in Kansas City, in order for that to get accomplished, as the K-State women lose last night to Iowa State 82-76. Derby native Addie Brown, 24 points, 11 rebounds. Central Plains' Emily Ryan had 11 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists. So two Kansas girls helping defeat K-State in Manhattan last night. And K-State now 23-6, 12-5 in the Big 12. Ioka Lee with 20, Serena Sundell with 15 points, 10 assists, Jalen Glenn with 10. The KU women are playing well down the stretch. They've won 8 of the last 10. They won at Central Florida 65-53. Tiana Jackson, 29 points, 10 rebounds. KU women now 17-11, 10-7 in the Big 12. Caitlin Clark sets another record. We'll get to that. LeBron is very close to setting a major milestone. The NFLPA releases their player team report cards, and for once, the Chiefs don't score very well. And a Chiefs Super Bowl, I don't want to say star, but made some key plays in the playoffs last couple years, going to be released. And another Chiefs star that will more likely be tagged and maybe even traded. Plus, the Chiefs announced some plans to renovate Arrowhead, and we'll be joined by the voice of the KU Jayhawks, Brian Haney. That's all to come here on the Sports Ticket. But first, we go to local sports, and the Sports Ticket brought to you, as always, by Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. The Concordia boys still alive.
Yeah, they won 51-44 in overtime over Rose Hill last night to make it to the 4A championship on the boys' side Saturday. They'll take on McPherson there Saturday for the championship in Class 4A. So, yeah, Concordia boys, nice to have four. It's so weird when it's like your first game and then, boom, you're into the championship if you win it.
Just that's the way how 4A set up.
System set up, but it's always weird to me when I'm inputting that on the website. Oh, yeah, they're already in the championship game.
4A, 5A, and 6A, you win two games, you get to you get the state. And now 1A, Division 1 and 2, there are many teams that only have to win two.
Yep.
And so the toughest route to get to state now appears to be 2A and 3A.
Two and three, yeah.
And once again, we wouldn't want to change the system.
Not at all.
No. Anyway, you know, it's great to have eight teams with none have a losing record, another sub-state with seven losing teams and one with a winning record, but I digress. Locker room chats tonight.
Yeah, we'll get things started here on Katie Cincinnati 4 with our final locker room chats of the season this evening. We'll talk with the coaches of St. John's, Tipton, Lakeside, and Rock Hills around 5:15 here tonight. Again, Katie Cincinnati 4 and katiecincinnati4.com.
All right, go through the schedule tonight, and we'll preview the games.
Yeah, tonight we'll preview Beloit taking on Silver Lake Boys on Katie Cincinnati 4 and the Beloit Trojan Channel, and then we'll have a doubleheader on T96.3 and 1A Division 1 Boys, Rock Hills Substate Osborne against Frankfort. Rock Hills against Clifton Cladigan. More on those games coming up. 1A Division 2, boys at Stafford. St. John's Tipton's the number one seed against 5 seed Otis Bison. That's a 6 o'clock start. And 2 seed Victoria against 6 seed Pawnee Heights in the second game there. 1A Division 1 semis at Solomon. Sylvan Lucas, the number 2 seed, taking on 6 seed Canton Galva. 6 o'clock tonight. And then Solomon Little River is the 1-4 matchup. And in the 2A girls substate at Oakley, number 2 seed Smith Center against 6 seed TMP. Don't look at the seeds. TMP beat Smith Center by 21 earlier this year, so obviously it will be a challenge there for the Letty Red. And in the other matchup, Hoxie's the number one seed against Ellis, the 4. Smith Center at 6 tonight, and then the second game at 7:30. You can find the full brackets for Substate Basketball at ncksports.com.
All right, tonight on Katie Country 94 and katiecountry94.com, live video stream at ncksports.com, the Blake Trojan channel. The Blake Trojan boys rank number 1 in 3A, but those rankings mean nothing now. You have to win to move on. You lose, you're done. They continue their run towards the state tournament. Hopefully, the top-seeded team at the Riley County Substate, they are 20-1. They won 10 in a row. They will face the number 5 seed, Silver Lake, who is 14-7 on the season. Silver Lake knocking off St. Mary's, the 4 seed on the road. Earlier this week, that was the third meeting between Silver Lake and St. Mary's. St. Mary's won the first two, including a buzzer-beating 3, but Silver Lake won the third meeting. They're playing some good ball. They beat Rock Creek, who's one of the top seeds in 4A recently, and lost to Rossville, who is the 2 seed beaten a sub-state in overtime very recently. So Silver Lake has played some good ball under first-year head coach Shannon Kruger. Yeah, there's thousands of Krugers at Silver Lake. They all played, it seemed like, quarterback or point guard or something like that. Shannon Kruger was an outstanding player at Washburn. He's in the Washburn Hall of Fame. It's his first year as head coach at Silver Lake in his second stint. He was head coach at Silver Lake for a few years right after he was a grad assistant for Bob Chipman at Washburn. He had the Washburn record for three-pointers in a career for like 20 years. He could play. I remember back in the day. But anyway, he's the head coach in his first year, and he's turned it around for Silver Lake, their first winning season in 5 years. And they're playing good ball. And Ryan Islett, head coach of the Bullet Trojan Boys, they're playing good ball as well. They've only lost once this year, and that's to a top-five team in 6A, Olathe North, who kept their season alive by winning last night in 6A and could very well go to state for the second straight year. Bullet has not had a tough run at it the last three games, won very easily in all three of their contests. Their last tough game was at Sacred Heart. Here's Ryan Eilert on Silver Lake, the matchup tonight at 6 o'clock.
Well, they've got a really solid group. They've got a nice post player, and then they complement him with guards that post up really well, and they've got some length, and they're able to shoot the three and at the same time want to drive, and their bigger guards will cut through and post up, and then they provide a lot of energy. And so we're going to have to come out and defend. They're a balanced group, so we're all going to have to defend. We're going to have to defend the perimeter and the paint.
Yeah, I have some concerns about this game a little bit. Silver Lake is a team that really likes to attack the basket. They're not just catch-and-shoot shooters. They have a kid that's really streaky. He can really shoot it from deep, and then he's had a couple games where he hasn't scored, a couple games where he scored 20. And if he's shooting well, then they're pretty – I mean, that changes things for them. They've got a little bit of size inside. They played a diamond and one against St. Mary's, who has outstanding guard. It was effective for them. It doesn't sound like they'll probably play too much of that tonight because Beloit has various guys that can beat you. Beloit's a more balanced team, although who knows, maybe we'll see a triangle in two. I think they're going to play some zone and pack it in, and then, you know, it'll be up to Gershner and Cheney to knock down outside shots and maybe Quinn Eilert as well, and those guys have done that throughout the year. But their concern is the size of Beloit, the physicality of Beloit. Rebounding will be key. Silver Lake out-rebounded St. Mary's by 11 earlier this week. Beloit has been a very good rebounding team throughout the season. But I think that, you know, the two things that stand out to me about Silver Lake is, one, they are balanced. Two, they can attack off the bounce. That's what they like to do. And then three, they've got a guard that's 6'1", 6'2" that will post up. And we haven't seen Beloit face guards that really post up very much. And so it'll be interesting, the matchup tonight. Silver Lake does give up a lot of points, about 59 a game, which is pretty high. Beloit is about 45, if I remember correctly. So defensively, the Beloit may have a bit of an advantage from the standpoint statistically. And they got 6'7" inside with Bryce Beisner, who's going to be a first-team All-State player. Who knows, maybe even 3A player of the year when it's all said and done. But Beloit's got the balance. Silver Lake's got balance. You know, hopefully the experience of Beloit making it sub-state final a year ago will help them. Silver Lake hasn't been in this situation before. Beloit's had a lot of success playing at Riley County. The last time at sub-state, they won there. They've won the last few times at Riley County on that floor. So it'll be a very interesting matchup tonight. But there's no doubt Beloit's going to have to play well. I mean, if people are sitting out there thinking Beloit's got cakewalk, when you look at the seeding, when you look at the records, that can be a little bit misleading. So all it takes is one bad night or one unbelievable night for the other team to pull off an upset. We've seen Osborne boys have an undefeated season, lose first round. We've seen Sebesta boys last year, first round was undefeated. Not first round, but they lost in the sub-state semifinals. It happens. Back in the day in 90s, Beloit, Wichita Kleser were 1-2. They got knocked out, didn't even make it to state, and everybody expected them to have a rematch in a state title game. They didn't even get to the state tournament. So there's always a little bit more pressure, I think, on the team that is favored. And the best thing to alleviate that pressure is to punch them in the mouth right off the bat. And if Beloit jumps out to a 10-2 lead, you feel good. Now, if you fall behind 10-2, now all of a sudden, do you press a little bit? Do you go ahead and handle things and stay composed? So forth and so on. And then how does Silver Lake handle it if they get punched in the mouth right off the bat? So the beginning of these games are always very important. You don't, you know, if it's even Steven through the first quarter, no big deal. But you just don't want to bury yourself early, whether you're the underdog or the favorite. So it should be a good one tonight. 6 o'clock, pregame at 5:45, 5:50 tonight on Katy Country 94 and KatyCountry94.com. Live video stream, NCKSports.com, be the Blake Trojan channel. Last time Silver Lake made state was 2017. Beloit made it back in the COVID year, and of course everything got stopped when they were getting ready for a semifinal matchup against Wichita Collegiate. 1A Division 1 Substate Rock Hills. We've got two games on the radio tonight on Z96.3 The Lake. Dusty, I'll have the call from Rock Hills High School.
Yeah, first one has the top-seeded Osborne Bulldogs at 20-1, taking on the number 4 seed Frankfort, which is 11-10 in this opening game. Osborne actually did beat Frankfort in the first round of Substate last year by 14, but Frankfort's obviously a better team. They were a very young team. They've kind of learned the system and under new coach Adam Schreiner there. So it should be an interesting game here tonight. Again, Osborne will be the favorite, clearly, but knowing with the schedule that Frankfort plays, Jason Wilson, the coach of the Bulldogs, expects a challenge here tonight despite that record.
Pretty sound offensively. They don't take a lot of ill-advised shots. I think they're pretty patient on the offensive end. Defensively, they most of the films I've seen have been playing man-to-man. So we look to that as a great opportunity to continue to grow and develop what we've been doing all year. Their 11-10 record, you can put that to the wayside at this point. If they were in a different league, who knows, they might only have 5 or 6 losses.
Again, Osborne and Frankfort, our first game here tonight. Osborne being led by Johnny Hamill this year, averaging over 20 points a game, but they've got a good balance with Nathan Goheen becoming more of a threat offensively as the season's gone on, and Dalton Garman, Doak Guttery, Aiden Conrad. Those five are going to be so important for Osborne. That we talk about them all year. They don't have a lot of depth, and those five are going to have to do a lot with Clay Guttery coming off the bench. Wes Anderson's averaging over 20 points a game for Frankfort. Really the only volume scorer as far as that's concerned that I know of. Haven't gotten full stats for Frankfort, but should be a very, very tough battle for Osborne despite those records coming in here tonight. Clifton Clyde and Rock Hills will be our second game of the night. Rock Hills picking up that upset win last week over Lakeside there in Downs to move on to the semifinals and have a home game here against a very, very good Clifton Clyde team. They don't have any individuals that just step out at you. They've got 3, 4, 5 guys any night that could go for double figures. They like to get after it, and Coach Zach Duffy, the head coach of the Rock Hills Grizzlies, knows that this is a very talented team tonight.
Very athletic, very long. They can all get up and down the floor. They can all shoot it. They're going to put immense pressure on us with a press and get in our face in a man-to-man. And, you know, when that ball goes through the hoop, if you make a basket or they turn you over, they're two passes and they're looking for a shot or a layup or any way to get you sped up and make it a game of kind of a track meet and get up and down the floor.
Rock Hills 7-12, the number 6 seed. Clifton Clyde's number 2 seed at 18-3. They did make it to state last year in 1A Division 1 and looking to battle back this year. Should be a couple interesting games here tonight. Again, we'll have pregame coverage at 5:45 and tip off at 6 o'clock for Osborne Frankfort. Rock Hills Clifton Clyde tipping off around 7:30 this evening on Z96.3 Through the Lake and KittyCountry94.com from Mankato.
I feel so old. Like, talking to Shannon Krueger yesterday, I'm like, I remember when you played in college. Oh, that was back in the late 90s, early 2000s. Adam Schreiner, I did high school games of his at Frankfort when he played at Frankfort. Yep. He was a very good guard.
I saw he was part of the 04 team that was runner-up at state. So.
Which they should have won that game. Yeah. They didn't foul, and the guy hit a 3 to tie it and force overtime. Had they fouled, and I know their head coach at the time beat himself up about that, had they fouled. And it was a guy that had only made a few threes all year. It wasn't the star guy, and he made the shot, and they went to overtime, had the momentum, but yeah, they should have won a state title that year. They had that one maybe if they just foul, but or if that shot doesn't go in. Sometimes you get a little luck. But Adam Schreiner's an outstanding player, and now he's a head coach. And you know, Justin Broxerman's a head coach of the Valley Heights girls. He played at Frankfort, and then I'm old. It's just that's all it is. It's old, man.
I'm not really far behind you from that regard. I'm definitely seeing, you know, parents and coaches that I called games for, and it's like, what are we doing right now?
Yeah, we're getting old. That's what we're doing.
What's going on?
No doubt. All right, athlete of the week.
Yes, Brogan Monty, the sophomore for Beloit, is our NCKSSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athlete of the Week. Obviously, well deserved. He had another outstanding season on the wrestling mats in his second campaign this past weekend at 3-2-1A state tournament in Salina. He went 4-0 in the 113-pound weight class, claiming his second straight state title. Monty opened the tournament on Thursday with a win by fall over Huck Seeger of Caney Valley, and then in the quarterfinals, won by fall over Alexander Hamill of Hill City, and then in the semi. Friday, he battled to an 8-4 decision over Derek Clydesdale of Norton to get to the championship match Saturday night, where he left really not a whole lot of doubt in the title bout. He won by fall in 3:26 over Keaton Rottinghouse of Nemaha Central, and with that win, he finished his sophomore season at 36-3. Excuse me, again the champion at 113 pounds, and now has a career record of 77-3 after a 41-0 finish, 3-2-1A state title at 106 as a freshman. Brogan Monty, the NCKSSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athlete of the Week.
Well deserved. Congratulations. Back-to-back state champion, and he has two more shots at it. He has a chance to be a 4-time state champion. He's halfway there. Read all about that and previous athletes of the week, NCKSSports.com. Coming up in 30 seconds, Caitlin Clark does it again.
Hi, I'm Elijah at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. You depend on your vehicle every day to get you where you need to go. The best way to keep it ready and avoid breakdowns is through proper maintenance. Whether it's oil, fluids, filters, spark plugs, belts, hoses, or brakes, we can help. Give yourself the peace of mind of knowing your vehicle is ready to go. For fast, friendly vehicle maintenance, call Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Find us just south of the courthouse or on the web at KieferBrothers.com.
Caitlin Clark officially surpassed Lynette Woodard's 3,649 career points for the overall Division I crown. Clark's historic moment occurred in Wednesday's 108-60 blowout win over Minnesota. She drained a three-pointer under 5 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter. Woodard played for the KU from 77 to 81. However, she is not listed in NCAA record books because when she played for the Jayhawks, the NCAA did not officially recognize women's sports. Instead, women's basketball was governed by the Association for Intercollegiate Athletics for Women. After Clark snapped Kelsey Plum's NCAA record on February 15th, Woodard released a statement congratulating Clark on her sensational career and said she looked forward to seeing her score many more points for years to come. Clark had 33 in that win last night. She now has 3,650 career points. She can now set the new NCAA overall scoring record held by LSU legend Pistol Pete Maravich if she can score 18 points on Sunday against Ohio State, which more than likely that will happen. See what LeBron did last night? LeBron James is 39 years old. Plays like he's 20. Last night, he took over the game against the Clippers. The Clippers were up 19 going into the fourth quarter. LeBron in the fourth quarter outscored the Clippers by himself with 19 of his 34 points. He assisted on 11 of the Lakers' 12 baskets. So he assisted or scored on all but 2 points in the fourth quarter. Lakers came all the way back to beat the Clippers last night, and they're fighting for playoff position, trying to be in the play-in tournament right now. And LeBron James is now just 40 points shy of scoring 40,000. In his career, the all-time leading scorer in NBA history, 40 points away from 40,000. For a guy that's, he's not a scorer, he's a passer. Yeah, it just adds to the legacy.
Oh, for sure, no doubt about it.
In men's college hoops, Wichita State built up a 15-point second-half lead, finished with a 74-66 win on the road at UAB. Wichita State now 12-17, 4-12 in the AAC with the win. Big 12 men's basketball last night, Iowa State number 8. They did not shoot the ball well at all, but still won 58-45 over Oklahoma to keep their hopes for a Big 12 title alive as they are 11-4 in conference play, 20-2-6 overall. Central Florida wins at Oklahoma State 77-71. Well, Marquise Valdez-Scantling is set to be released. That information broke after we got off the air yesterday. It will provide $12 million in cap savings for the Chiefs. In 2023, MVS put up career low numbers across the board. 315 receiving yards, one touchdown on 21 receptions. Played in 16 games. Of course, had that drop that could have been a game-winning touchdown against the Eagles during the regular season. But came through with the clinching catch in the 4th-and-9 pass at Baltimore in the AFC title game this year. Caught a touchdown in Super Bowl 58 against the Niners. And Mahomes credits MVS with coming up with a play call that got them a first down on a 4th-and-1 in overtime that kept their season alive and eventually got the Lombardi. And so MBS is gone. I think it is crazy and funny how people are such knee-jerk reaction. And you could just, you know, some fans are just yo-yos. And I mean that like actual yo-yo. Like, you know, if you've ever did a yo-yo, oh, it goes up, mm-hmm. it goes down. And fans are just like on a teeter-totter. Remember that on the playground? Teeter-totter. Mm-hmm. High, low, high, low, high, low, up, down, up, down. Scantling sucks. We got to get rid of this guy. He's horrible. He can't catch anything. After they already wanted to cut Kadarius Toney and Sky Moore, those two weren't allowed to play anymore by the Chiefs because of whatever injuries they want to make up, possibly. And then it's MVS. Oh, and then MVS, you know, he makes this great catch. Oh my goodness gracious, MVS. And then he does fine in the Super Bowl, makes a few catches, catches the Super Bowl, touchdown, reception, whatever. And then all of a sudden he's released yesterday. Yeah, MVS, I kind of like to him hang around. He really came through in the playoffs. It's like, no, for $12 million, he's not doing enough.
No. Nobody came through in the playoffs for $12 million except Patrick Mahomes.
Right, right.
And he's getting way more than that. So
yes, exactly. So listen, this makes sense for the Chiefs. It gives them more cap space. And they also haven't officially, but they are going to place the franchise tag on Legarius Sneed. And the Chiefs have given Sneed permission to seek a trade. They allowed Tyreek Hill to seek permission for a trade when they couldn't come to an agreement. Their first priority, they say, is to get Chris Jones deal done. So if they can get that done, then they'll turn their attention to Legarius Sneed. I think they got till March 13th to get this done, if I remember correctly. And if they can't, then if Sneed has a trade lined up and the Chiefs don't want to give the long-term deal to Sneed, they could let him, you know, trade him to that team.
Get compensation for losing Snead, and then they don't have to pay Snead. Or if they get the Jones deal done, they may be able to work it out and keep Snead. So we shall see. I doubt both players will be back, Jones and Snead. I don't even know if either one will be back, but I don't think I think Snead's probably gone, in my opinion. The NFL Players Association released their player team report cards for 2024, and the results are suboptimal for the Chiefs. Head coach Andy Reid gets an A+, but the Chiefs ranked dead last in training staff and ownership. Ownership got an F- from the players, which is pretty interesting stuff. Although, in fairness, it only focused on one thing, and that was the practice facility, not the actual locker room at Arrowhead. And that's pretty nice. I've seen that. Anyway, here's how the Chiefs graded out. Out of 32 teams, they got a D+ for treatment of families. That's 18th out of 32. For food and cafeteria, C-. Nutritionist and dietitian, an F. Locker room, F. Training room, a D. Training staff, an F. And yet the Chiefs, the last how many years, haven't had that gigantic injury that I can call. I think that's interesting, and I wonder about this thing. Weight room, C+. Strength coaches, C+. Team travel, D. Head coach, A+. Ownership, F-, which, listen, this is just people wanting to come up with something negative against the Chiefs, in my opinion. There was no need to put F-. You just put F. There's no such thing. But anyway, Matt Derrick said the irony of this report card coming out at the exact same moment Clark Hunt is introducing plans for reimagined Arrowhead, which they did yesterday. The Chiefs had a press conference. Chiefs are planning to do some various things should the 3/8 cent sales tax on the upcoming ballot initiative in April be passed through. Kansas City Chiefs Chairman and CEO Clark Hunt, along with team president Mark Donovan, presented renovation concepts for a reimagined GEHA field at Arrowhead Stadium. They went over this yesterday. Clark Hunt estimated that the total cost of the renovation project at Arrowhead would be $800 million, and the Hunt family would invest $300 million towards that total amount. The 3/8 county tax would fund the repair and maintenance of the stadium. The remainder of the $800 million for the proposed renovations would be raised from other city, state, or private contributions. Donovan added that the earliest start to the project would be 2027, after the 2026 FIFA World Cup, which some of those games will be played at Arrowhead, with the hopes of completion by 2030 and potentially 2031. If more time is needed, the Chiefs claim these renovations will only be made possible if Jackson County voters approve the proposed extension of the 3/8 cent sales tax on a ballot initiative coming up in April. We would not be willing to sign a lease for another 25 years without the financing, the property, renovate and reimagine the stadium, Hunt said. The financial puzzle is very important to us in making sure we have enough funds to do everything that we have outlined today, end of quote. The seating capacity of Arrowhead will reportedly remain above 70,000. The team also said the idea of creating some form of roof for the stadium that maybe would help them get a Super Bowl was never seriously considered. Hunt went on to add that the elements he thought are part of the game, and it actually helps the Chiefs in the playoffs, which it seemed to do that against the Dolphins, no doubt about that. Quick thoughts on the Chiefs and what their plans are, and obviously it's, you know, counting on the taxpayers a pony up, right?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about all of this is the Royals and Chiefs, all the renderings and everything that they're releasing, and it's like hopefully you get the taxpayers to agree to all this and then just go do it. But it's not my money, obviously, but I like what I've seen from the renderings yesterday and everything like that, and I kind of agree with Clark Hunt there about that roof that everybody likes to talk about, because they're probably going to be expected to use that if they have it for a cold January playoff game. Right. And if they don't want to use it, the only reason you do that is to get a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And is it worth the time and effort for that? Maybe it is. I don't know. But, I do like some of the things that I saw there and what you're talking about there with the renovations. And it looks weird to see that. Like it is, though, because you know Kauffman's not going to be part of that, and it's going to be blown out.
Parking and some kind of entertainment district there.
Yeah, but you know, I think there's potential to do a lot of stuff out there once you get rid of that other stadium that's there. So I think you could maybe build some other eating establishments and places like that, too. So I'm interested to see how it goes and how it moves forward.
I would be interested to know if you blew up Arrowhead and started from scratch, what would the cost be for a brand-new stadium? $800 million to renovate?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm almost sitting here going, I almost thought that there was a football stadium built for $1.2 billion. For another $400 million, why not go state-of-the-art brand new?
Yeah.
But I don't know that for sure. I mean, the Royals project is $2 billion, but it's not for just the stadium. It's for the whole entertainment district that they're supposedly going to build or hope to build or whatever else. So, big tax initiative in Jackson County. Former Royal Frank White continues to be against a lot of this stuff.
Uh-huh.
So, we'll see how that all works. Speaking of Royals, the Royals win yesterday 9-7 over the Mariners. Brady Singer pitched well yesterday in a few innings of work. The Royals are 5-2 in spring training. They'll play today at 2:05. Jordan Lyles is on the hill. Can't wait to watch that one. Oh, Royals in the White Sox. Luckily, now he's our fifth starter, probably, instead of our number two starter, which is a big reason why the Royals stunk last year. Not because of Jordan Lyles, but because their pitching just wasn't very good, and they addressed that in the offseason.